Welcome back to this Season 14, Episode 22 of the Ubuntu Podcast. Today we're going to be discussing what browsers we use and why, and we've got some command line love. But before we get started, if you want to speak to us in between shows, you could join our Telegram at ubuntupodcast.org/telegram. And we'd really appreciate it if you head over to ubuntupodcast.org/donate to help support our production costs so Joe Ressington can produce our shows for us and make us sound fabulous. And with that said, I would like to introduce my hosts for the evening. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Hello, Martin. I'm very well, thank you.
And you, Alan. Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome. So, Mark, what have you been up to?
I have been migrating to Vault Warden.
Now, I remember this. This is a Rust implementation of the Bitwarden backend. Is that right?
Oh, the rename of... that's it, isn't it?
So I was already running the Rust implementation of the Bitwarden backend, but I was running the version that was called Bitwarden RS.
Right.
And then it got renamed to Vault Warden. So I had to do some fiddling around to make sure that I would continue using the new named version and not the old named version, which wasn't being updated anymore.
And was it seamless?
It was seamless. So the way I've chosen to run it is I'm running it as a Docker container using the systemd Docker service. And all I had to do was go into the systemd...
The unit file,
thank you. And change the name of the container that it was running and then restart the service and everything worked.
So systemd starts the Docker container?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Very good. Yes. And I have only been hearing good things about Vault Warden since you mentioned it. And I'm considering making the move myself. So is there anything that I should be aware of before I embark on such a journey?
I continue to have good experience. I've not found any nasties lurking. It does the same job, but doesn't make my home server catch fire.
Brilliant.
And that's all I ask.
That sounds very agreeable. And Alan, what have you been up to?
I've been setting my home server on fire. I've been migrating all the data I mentioned previously. I've migrated data from my three old microservers onto a newer Gen 8 microserver, and that's now up in the loft, which leaves me with three spare microservers. And what I'm doing is deleting all the data off them, ready to throw them on eBay. because it turns out people still buy even the N36L, which is the oldest of old crusty home servers. But I've got an interesting way of cleaning the disks.
Scrubbing brush?
Well, you could use a scrubbing brush with a bit of fairy liquid, or you could use DD and send some zeros down to the disk. But what I do is I have a little script, and I've done this for ages. I don't know why I haven't mentioned it before. I have a little script, and it creates three little files called 1, 2, and 3, and then it copies 1 plus 2 to 3, and then 2 plus 3 to 1, and then 1 plus 3 to 2. So over time, all three of the files grow dramatically. They like exponentially grow because they're adding each other to, you know, the size. Mm-hmm. And it basically just fills the disks and you end up with a full disk and basically all the data is gone. So it's my equivalent to running DD over everything, but without having to reformat or anything. I just leave that running and it chugs away. And it also thrashes the absolute what's-its out of the disks. So they're constantly reading and writing across all of them because it's a little RAID array. And so that allows me to say when I'm selling it that the disks work okay because I successfully wrote like 10 terabytes of data across them over a period of 2 days.
I don't do that. I do something similar. I just squirt dev urandom out to the block devices.
I used to do that, but I found that quite slow because it blocks on the amount of entropy that it has, whereas this just sits there and chugs and chugs and chugs and chugs and copies. I mean, it's still not fast. It's also a long time. But what it did do was one of the disks failed at the end. Oh. And so that's a good thing. So I pulled that disk out, and that's not going in that server that's going on sale because that disk is clearly
dead.
Duff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that saved me from shipping a server full of disks to someone and them complaining that one of the disks was dead.
Indeed.
That I didn't even know.
Very good. And with that data erasure tip, let's move on. Right, we're going to have a little chat about the web browsers we use. our daily driver web browsers. So I suppose the best place to start is obviously at the beginning, but Mark, what is your daily use web browser?
So I have pretty much always used Firefox since it became a thing. I've dabbled with Chrome in the past, but basically at work and at home, it's the default on my Ubuntu desktop at home, of course, and I've never really, you know, had that much of a reason to switch. So I'm using Firefox.
Okay. And Alan, what are you using?
I was using Firefox, and then I might have used Chromium at some point, and then I used Chrome, and then maybe back to Firefox. And there was always events that triggered me switching browser. Something happened that annoyed me, like Firefox would just stop loading pages. It would be a white page instead of the pages, or my browser profile would get deleted for some reason, and it would frustrate me, and I'd be like, right, rage quit, don't want to use that browser anymore because my profile disappeared. And I've settled now on Microsoft Edge browser, which I use both on my main machine here and also on my work laptop as well. They're both running Edge.
Okay. And we'll get into the whys and wherefores of these decisions later. And yeah. I use Brave these days. So in life before Canonical, I was using Google Chrome since Google Chrome was a thing. And then while I was working at Canonical, I was using Firefox because I thought it best to be using the thing that we were shipping in the distribution as, you know, the thing that I used on a daily basis. And when I left Canonical, I'm going to have to say I wasn't happy with Firefox. We can get into that a little bit later. And I went hunting around and I landed on Brave as my place where I now do my browsing.
So one thing I find quite interesting, and maybe this just speaks to us as being geeks and tinkerers, is that considering that Chrome has basically eaten the entire browser market, none of us are currently using Chrome as our main browser. I thought that was an interesting point. Mm.
Well, let's start there. So why don't you use Chrome as your default browser, Mark?
Okay. I think it's more about why I do use Firefox, because I've tried, I have tried both Edge and Brave recently, and I've tried Chrome in the past. But what Firefox has is what they call the awesome bar. Now, what this does differently to the others is I never keep bookmarks of anything in the browser. What I do is I visit pages and my pages go into my history. And when I want to go back to a page, I type some words from the page into the address bar and it searches through and finds them. And I'm so used to the way that that works in Firefox that essentially I'm locked in. I can't use another browser because even if I import all of my history, they don't let me search it in the same way.
So I think what you're saying is that Firefox just works for you.
Yeah, it fits with my model of usage. I mean, there are other nice features like I really like the container tabs feature, particularly like the Facebook container extension, which automatically locks Facebook into a container, which then can't see your sessions in your other browser tabs. I think that's a nice, like, transparent privacy feature, which I find really handy. Right.
So I had been using Firefox. And the reason I'm not using Google Chrome again is because I'm not a super privacy conscious person, but I am aware of, you know, what is going on in the world and how data is being sort of harvested and used. And I didn't want to use Google Chrome because I just wanted to break up the ability for all of this profiling and, you know, data collection to be as effective. So I wanted to use something that I could have good control over, sort of privacy controls and ad filtering and cookie tracking and all of that stuff. And Brave has got gobs and gobs of great features of actually disabling a lot of that stuff that's embedded in websites. So that was how I ended up on Brave, was to break up that sort of profiling and find something that in my mind is as good as the privacy features that exist in Firefox.
So I used Chrome right up until a couple of months ago. I can't actually remember what it was that triggered me to switch. I think I just wanted to try out Edge and see what it was like, and it stuck. I can't actually think if I don't think there was a rage quit moment for when I decided I didn't want to use Chrome anymore. It was just, I certainly had those in the past, and I've certainly had them with Firefox many times, but I didn't have it with Chrome. So I just tried it. And yeah, so I don't really have a good story as to why I don't use Chrome anymore. I think the fact that I use Edge is the reason why I don't use Chrome.
So is there something, are there features that Edge has that Chrome doesn't, which are what made you stick there?
Well, it has a lot of the same features as Chrome,
yeah.
So that's good. And on top of that, one of the things I've talked about before that I really like is the ability to make apps out of websites,
mm-hmm.
Where you get an icon that you can alt tab to, and that becomes a window. And in that window is that website, whether it's YouTube or my bank or TweetDeck or whatever, Mastodon or whatever. Those are all icons, and I click on them and I get a separate window. So I like having my mental model being a window is an application or a window is a website. I quite like that. And Edge actually makes that even easier. It has a button on the toolbar and in the URL that you press it and it says install app. And if you just go to the BBC website, for example, there's a button that says install app and you click it, bang, you've got an icon on your desktop. So it reinforced that thing that I already used that I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of specific feature that Edge has over and above Chrome, the main one is vertical tabs. Because I am one of these people who's a tab hoarder and I keep loads and loads of tabs open to the point where the tabs are like tiny, tiny half a fav icon. And with
the struggle is real.
With Edge, it's built in. It's not an extension. Built in, it has this vertical tab. So you get a stripe down the left hand side and each tab is listed in its own line. And you can see part of the URL as well as the icon, but you can also pin them at the top. And so you get a short little array of icons for each of the ones that you've pinned. And then beneath that, you get a line for each additional website. That is certainly a major pull for me.
So one of the reasons why I landed on Brave is because it's enough like Chrome that everything that Chrome can do, Brave can do as well. But in terms of sort of distinguishing features, I've talked about the privacy stuff. I know a lot of people associate Brave with sort of, to coin a phrase,
crypto nonsense.
Yes, coin a phrase, crypto nonsense. But that isn't like an intrinsic capability. You can disable that stuff. You're not, forced to use BAT and rewards and all of those things. It's just another option. It's not even on by default. You have to do some things to turn it on.
Right.
But I think it's well known now among, regular listeners. I've been using Brave as the browser on my phone and tablet for many, many years now.
Mm.
And the killer feature is this. The syncing for Brave is peer-to-peer, and it syncs everything, including all of your open tabs. So when I go to any device, I have the same browser presence and session on everything, if that's my laptop or my workstation or my tablet. And I really value that. I like the fact it's not going to some central place where my browsing habits can be profiled. And I also like the fact that it's just one view of the web of what I'm doing. I can switch between devices at a moment and it's all just there. I really like that.
That's really interesting. Alan, are you running Edge on mobile as well as on your desktop?
No, I actually use Brave on mobile because I value the ad blocking of Brave. Because on desktop, I can use ad block extensions of and all kinds of things. But when I'm on mobile and I'm out of the house and I'm not near a AdGuard or Pi-hole or anything like that, and I don't use VPNs, I use Brave because it blocks all those horrible adverts and stuff and makes the web usable again. What's the killer feature for Firefox for you, other than the search bar? Are there any other things that really keep you there?
I don't know. I mean, I always have the sort of the feeling, I think it's really just being ingrained into the idea of Firefox as an open browser for an open web. I think that's one of the things that keeps me there. All of the other, unless you're going to just run like the open source Chromium, which is unpolished, let's put it that way.
Is it? I don't find it any different from Chrome.
I think that's why I'm not using it, actually, because it is like no different from Chrome.
There's a few like very small things missing. But then what I mean is it doesn't have the polish that Brave and Edge provide.
Right.
Like I might as well be using Chrome if I want. But you know, if I want an open browser for the open web, I think of Firefox because, you know, I started using it back when it launched, when, you know, it was almost like a movement as well as a browser. And I think part of my personality is still in that mindset. And as a web developer as well, I kind of feel like someone has to keep carrying the torch for more than one rendering engine on the web.
Well, and that's the main point, is that Brave and Edge and Chromium and Vivaldi and Chrome and Opera are all sharing the same rendering engine.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it something that we should worry about, that all of these browsers, I mean, there is obviously enough there that several companies feel they can compete in the browser space by basing their products on the same open source code base, which is in one way quite good. But the danger is that where we're trying to base the web on open standards, if you've only got one implementation of those standards, then it's not really an open standard anymore.
And the browser is mostly controlled by one organization. The browser engine is mostly controlled by one organization. Yeah. That doesn't help either. No, I completely get it. And I can understand why, you know, whenever I see people lobbying for you should use Firefox and how dare you use the Linux desktop and not use Firefox, it's the natural bedfellow of a free software advocate and a privacy advocate, and not that I am either of those. So I can see why people like yourself and other people who are fully paid up members of the free software community would see Firefox as the right browser to choose.
Mm.
But the browser has become very much the operating system in which I do all my work, whether that's navigating around GitHub or emails or forum posts or writing documents. I do so much, like even talking to you now, we're doing that in a browser. And so there's so much that happens in a browser. I want it to be the best experience I can for me personally, selfishly, because actually that's more important to me than an open web. It's more important to me that I can get my job done, which is the thing that pays my salary, and that I can log on to my bank and it all works perfectly and I can do all those things. The freedom aspect and the privacy aspect actually takes a lower tier for me.
Yeah, and that's where I arrived. So as I was choosing my next browser, I had gone through an extended period of frustration, you know, because of lockdown and the increasing use of web apps and video conferencing and all the rest of it to get stuff done. Firefox is just not up to snuff with what the Chromium-based engines are capable of. And I was getting frustrated by either it not working, being told that only half the features were available, or it consuming all of my battery in a nanosecond because, you know, it wasn't optimized for whatever was going on. So that's why I deliberately chose another browser that was based on the Blink engine or Chromium in order to get a decent experience, but break up a little bit of, you know, what Google is collecting and knows about me.
Yeah, I do feel like increasingly I am coming across where I'm trying to use applications on the web where, you know, they're not written or they're not tested on Firefox. Basically, you can tell because there's glaring bugs which it just can't cope with. And so I do feel like I'll probably end up just being sort of forced off of it at some point. But I am also using Firefox on mobile, and I have to say, you know, there are some niceties of Firefox on mobile which I don't find in other browsers. For example, the fact that you can move the address bar to the bottom on Firefox Mobile, I find really good. The fact that there's a Bitwarden extension for Firefox. Now, one thing that really bugs me is the disparity of web extensions on mobile and on the desktop. And I'm sure there's plenty of technical reasons for that. But the fact that they've managed to do it with some of the extensions I care about on Firefox, whereas with some of the other browsers, it's like you have to have a separate app and switch between them.
In terms of extensions, I was quite pleased with Edge that it just has everything. Like it's got all the same extensions as Chrome.
Right.
But built in, there's a feature that I have hunted for extensions on other browsers to make this better.
Yeah.
And this is a thing that's built into Edge. So I don't have to do this on Edge. And that is a capability to put tabs to sleep when they're not being used. That's mm-hmm. built into Edge.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm looking at the tabs that I have open right now, and there are a few which are just grayed out. They're Google spreadsheets. They're Google Docs. And I have in Edge, you can say, just make them go to sleep after a certain amount of time. But you can also whitelist and blacklist certain, I think you've whitelist and blacklist. You can, or allow list and deny list. You can set certain domains put to sleep or not. And so my email domain, I've set to never go to sleep. So I always get notifications when I get email. But Google Docs, I've said go to sleep after 20 minutes, because if I'm not looking at a document for 20 minutes, I don't want it sitting there chugging away using like battery and CPU for JavaScript rendering and so on. And the second that I click on it, it then wakes up immediately. And I've found extensions on other browsers that do a similar thing, but they're nowhere near as baked in and effective as this thing is in Edge. And I've had extensions on Chrome that have actually lost all the tabs that I had sleeping one day. The extension crashed and just every single tab turned into a blank page. I was like, brilliant.
So you've just highlighted something there that makes Edge better than Chrome. So Mark, you know, what could you identify as something that could make Firefox better for you?
Something that could make Firefox better for me. It does feel like the rendering engine needs to catch up, basically. There's a lot of things which are either not implemented or I suppose some of them haven't been standardized and Chrome is just running ahead. But I feel like basically that's the experience that is lacking. The interface, it's just had a refresh and it looks nice. So I can't really complain about that. But yeah, for me, it's just the rendering engine needs to catch up with some of the more modern features, especially around things like video conferencing.
Is there anything missing from Brave then, Martin?
There's only one bug I've encountered. So, you know, like you can drag a tab out and it becomes a separate window.
Mm-hmm.
If you drag a tab, that just doesn't seem to work. But you can right click on a tab and say, make this a window, and that works perfectly fine.
like the past.
But I've always been in the habit of just like, oh, I want to drag this out and switch it to another workspace because this page has information in it that I need for this spreadsheet that I'm preparing. And the fact that doesn't work bugs me. But that's like the only issue I've bumped into, and there is a viable workaround, so it's not so bad. And is there anything else in your early experimentations with Edge that you would like to see changed or improved?
No, I'm really pleased with it. I'm using the deb from an upstream Microsoft repository, and I get a little notification in the corner that tells me that the browser needs updating, and I just close and restart it, and everything's fine. But because I was already a bit of a Chrome fan, when I switched to Edge, I just picked up all the good things that were in Chrome that had made its way into Edge, plus all these little niceties like the apps. And oh, there's also a thing baked into Edge that offers coupons when you're on websites buying stuff. It tries to find coupon codes in order to get you discounts. And there are extensions to do that. There's a famous one called Honey, and there are others on other websites. I've never had a tremendous amount of success with these coupon finders, but actually the one in Edge has worked, and I ended up getting a chunky discount on something just this week. So that, you know, Edge has saved me money. So.
Not bad for free.
Yes.
Indeed. So with that, we'll wrap up there. These are the browsers that the three of us are using. What browsers are you using? Have you strayed from the well-trodden path of Google Chrome and Firefox? And if so, which browsers are you using and why? And if you are using Firefox and Chrome, what keeps you there? What's the stickiness of those browsers that you love? Do send your feedback to show@ubuntupodcast.org. And now it's time for some command line love. And this command line, love, is called Background Remover. Who found this?
I did. So there's a website called backgroundremover.app where you can upload a video or image and it removes the background from it. But clicking around the website, I found a GitHub account. And there is, the website itself is powered by an open source command line tool called Background Remover. And you can feed it an image or a video and it will analyze it using some Python modules. And it will remove the background from it and give you the image with no background or the video with the background sort of blanked. And then you could do other interesting things, like you can remove the background from one video and then overlay the result onto another video, for example. So you can sort of switch it into another background or do chroma key effects and things like that. It's quite neat.
This is something I've needed so many times, and I've had to do in hard mode using GIMP or, you know, Glimpse. And it's remarkably easy to use. So you can just say background remover, file in, file out, and magic happens. So we'll have a link to the show notes for this. Let us know how you get on with it. Gold stars for people that post their removed background images in the Ubuntu Podcast Telegram channel. That's ubuntupodcast.org/telegram. So you get on with it. And that is all we have for episode 22. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll speak to you all again next time.